Hey everyone, it's Sonia here. Thank you so much again for joining us. This is episode 146. And for those that are catching us on YouTube, you know that this is a heart to heart. Whether you've stumbled across it or you were given the link or you've been following this page for a while, heart to hearts mean we have a video component which gets posted on YouTube at the same time as the audio gets released. So you can listen to this on your favorite listening platforms as well. We have another special guest with us, and that's what heart to heart means. It means we're sitting there having conversation with a friend and including you into this dialogue. So as you're going about doing your day, I want you to join James and I today. James is from North Wales, UK. He is the second gentleman I have on my show, and you're gonna love his story. He's gonna fill us in as he does his intro. I'm going to probe him along and ask a little bit of questions. But the couple things I've learned about James so far, there is a major ripple effect in everything we do in life. And it starts off with our tenacity and our desire to never give up, not just as entrepreneurs, but as people. So, James, take it away. Can you introduce yourself for us, please?
I'm a th thank you for the wonderful introduction, Sonia. I'm a two-time Paralympian, TEDx speaker, author, performance and success coach. I'm gonna forget something here because there's so many that I've obviously got to my name, but my beginning is obviously I was born with a disability. So you talked about tenacity. I've got to probably thank my family for that in terms of that perseverance. That dedication to the craft of, I'll use the coin the word stubborn, because that's what we will call it. That's we inherently don't like the word no in terms of it's. I think as a younger, my younger self, especially as a preteen and a teenager, it was almost to prove people wrong. Whereas now, it's very much trying to prove myself right as if it's a worthy cause. I'm not just trying to spite somebody. It's something that I want to do. So there's almost like more of positive vibe about it. So it's more what because when people have asked, be it clients, customers, and say, "Oh, can I lean into negative energy?" It's like, well, you can, but I wouldn't choose to do it personally now that I've kind of got the other side of it. If I can do it through being kind, being caring, self-care, self-love, and having empathy to myself and other people, I'd rather do that than kind of going down the route that we talked about off air of I had a teacher in secondary school say I would amount to nothing. I pretty much disproved that statement. And just in the introduction alone, but I did dip into negative energy as an athlete to utilize when I was unmotivated and maybe lacked inner strength to get myself up and get after it to utilize that inner voice of, hey, James, you're not good enough. I'll get on with it and I'll train, but. What that probably did in terms of energy probably is not ideal. It's dark. It's I would very much say to people now as like, well, it's useful at times to get a task done, but then okay, I use meditation and mindfulness quite a lot nowadays to almost hit the reset button. It's like I've done that task. Let's set the equilibrium and then feel a bit better again. So that's probably me in a nutshell. From that, obviously, I resided overseas for 19 years of my life because of more so my mother. She worked for NATO for 30 or 33 years exactly. So we lived in Belgium for so long. So I can speak fluent French. I wouldn't try and speak with the Quebecois because that's a different French altogether. But I probably could still understand, and I had a French Canadian client that I did a sales call in French, so I was quite impressed with myself to be able to, well, let alone make the sale, but as in to feel him, make him at ease that, hey, your English is not as good as you would like. I'm more than I wasn't comfortable, but as in I was more than competent in my own language skills to kind of go, I'll do something that's inherently difficult for me, but if it's going to make you feel at ease, I'm not okay. I had to go off and do a lot of research in terms of like, what's this specific word in French, because it's not being lazy and putting, you know, like le weekend and things like that, but to literally kind of go, okay, I want this, but and make it as natural for him and for me that I can make the experience as pleasurable as possible. So that it showcased to me that, hey, you, if you wanted to, you've got another bow to the arrow that I probably never thought I would establish from that.
Well, there's a couple things to be said there. And the first thing I want to start off with saying is, moi aussi, je parle un petit peu de français. Mon français est québécois, though. I did learn French growing up. I did French immersion, and my mother's from Quebec. So the French we're taught in school is Parisian. The French you learn on the streets and at home is Quebecois. So there's a whole mixed bag in here. And my biggest takeaway with what you said, James, is you're continuously applying to yourself what you can do over and over again.
I don't like the word I can't.
Ha! What is it about the word you can't?
Well, it's not possible. I've had a conversation with somebody that they said, I cannot do something anymore. It's like, no. What you're not able to do is your wife doesn't want you to, because he lost his legs, you didn't want him climbing ladders anymore. That's, you're not allowed to do that. That's not the same thing as I cannot. You still got the ability to do it. So what's the word about I cannot? It's very, very negative in the words. It's very dismissive of your own ability of being able to do something, because you almost like dismiss it by putting, I'll put the whole word, C, A-O-N-T at the end of can. Whereas if you were to teach a child, and when I seen this on social media, I thought it was amazing. I can't yet.
Yes.
And I think for whatever reason, we get to adolescence and older, we accept other people's either narrative, storyline, beliefs as our own, and then and almost kind of go, well, no, this, I think the way that I think, because of, like, well, that's not true. I've obviously had the foresight and the awareness to dip into that, to kind of go, okay. I even had a conversation before my mother went on holiday about something in that nature, because she's implied that, do you think the same way that I do because I have an impressionable position on you? It's like, no, we have the same viewpoint on a specific topic, but I haven't got there because of what you've, I'll use the word indoctrinated, in towards my, it's like, no, I'm a full grown adult. I can come to the same conclusion. There's going to be some collusion. Mm-hmm. Because I'm her son, and I probably would have grown to up to a certain point to mimic. But I think now that I'm 36 years old, it's like, well, now I'll make a decision based on the university studies that I've had, because that obviously teaches you to be a critical thinker. I probably dipped into that a little bit more now that I've got a coach. So, okay, look at things not for face value. And to if I have a desire to know more, I've still got to go away and learn a bit more, and to kind of go, okay, that's my perspective on it now. But to say in the year's time, 5 years' time, to say that I would still have the viewpoint would be somewhat untrue. And it might be the same viewpoint in a year's time. But I think your perspective towards, we before we come on air, we were talking about books. If you were to read an old book again, when your perspective has changed, you would view certain points within it completely differently, because you've evolved as a person. So I think I'm one of those things that I look at it maybe because of my upbringing, maybe because of the disability of the word itself is not great, because obviously it's the inability to have to, whereas I don't have a problem. Some people within the disability community can't use it. It's like, it's a word. It's got a different definition in a dictionary. You don't have to comply to it. So I would probably put it in the same light as cannot, as it's just a label. It doesn't really mean anything unless you give it the power that it has over you. So I think I've had that understanding. In order to get better as an individual, I've got to be born accepting of who I am, embracing of what I've done. And at the end of the day, if I don't want to do something versus I cannot do, they're two separate things.
So there's a couple of things you mentioned there. Very, very empowering, very influential. And can you share with us are you comfortable sharing with us what your disability is?
No problem at all. No problem. So the acronym for the disability that I've got is PFFD. The medical definition for it is femoral dysplasia. So I'm going to try and give people a visual thing, even the ones on YouTube who can't see it, because I could take the prosthetic off and that's about it. But I don't have a femur bone. I've got a small tibia and fibula, and that's attached to my hip. So there's a well-known Canadian procedure that's called rhinoplasty, where they would literally break the leg, turn it around, and the heel becomes the kneecap.
Oh.
Whereas for me, I couldn't have that done because I was missing too many bones. So what my mom wanted to do for me is, I asked, I think when I was probably about 12 or 13, can you give me all the facts? Okay. For one surgery, does it outweigh having to maybe have multiple surgeries in my 40s, 50s? Nah. I'm going to go with what I have. And through being in disability sport, I've seen, gosh, probably tens, if not in the 20s, of people with similar disabilities. Whereas in the early days, it's like, well, I want to be normal like everybody else because I don't see anybody that's like me. Whereas I think, obviously, we're now in an age that we've got the internet, we've got social media. It's very easy for the younger generation to kind of go, ah, I can see somebody like me. And I like to speak to parents, especially with who have got kids with a disability, to kind of go, you don't need to be so, would use the word morbid, because that's how I would describe my grandmother after the fact, because I spoke to my mother during the height of the pandemic a couple of years ago about how the adversity affected my family, because I was curious. And I know obviously it's affected me, but I was like, well, okay, let's go a layer deeper and see how it affected loved ones. And unbeknownst to me, my grandmother's no longer alive. My grandmother was like, oh, how's James going to survive? Is he going to be in a wheelchair for us? She never portrayed that to me personally. I'm thinking, wow. And I shared this on a live a couple of years ago, and people were in tears. Like, for me, it's blasé. It's literally, it's something that I've learned 5 minutes ago. I thought I'd share it to give a different perspective on me. And to me, it's nonchalant. It doesn't mean anything, because obviously the person that I knew was the complete opposite. I don't know if it was a facade to kind of go, come on, the sky's the limit for you, James. So for me, when I speak to those parents, it's like, well, who's to say your son or daughter can't achieve far beyond what I've done? So you don't need to be worried. Like, just yes, give them the push and the praise and everything that comes with it, to kind of go, hey, so-and-so, you want to do this? Okay, how about it? You're going to make mistakes. You're going to hurt yourself. You're going to get some scrapes. You're going to get some bumps. My family did that from me to the wolves. I don't mean literally, but as in, like, figuratively.
Yeah.
It was literally, hey, your disability is difficult, but let's see what you can do. So this probably irritates both my parents. I was a B grade student. They didn't like that because I didn't want to apply myself in the classroom. I'd rather do it in, well, you can see behind me, like the sporting yep. stuff. So we have this argument from time to time, even now. I was like, oh, why don't you apply yourself in the class? Because I didn't want to. I'll give some people some context. I believed, to the stereotypes of films and movies, that jocks and the geeks cannot be one person. That's obviously far from the truth. That I think you can probably be literally both if you wanted to be.
Yep.
I would probably never be the salutatorian or valedictorian because I didn't like my books that much. Yes, I probably could have applied myself to, I don't know, maybe B plus, A minus. Is it a regret? No, not now. But as in, just to give the people, for me, when I do speak to the parents, it's like, hey, there's no point coddling somebody or wrapping them up in cotton wool, because that's not going to serve the person in the long run. Because, and this is a countryman of yourself, so some people don't like Jordan Peterson, some people love him. So it's either love-hate relationship. And the video I saw on, I believe, TikTok this week, of he was saying that inherently we've got untapped potential in our DNA. So by facing adversity, we unlock things that we could maybe not imagine. So for me, I went, wow. It's like, so for people that are scared of facing things, you're thinking, what, you're almost encaging yourself from what is actually, what is full. And I've known that with, you hear things about content towards, you know, what we're fully capable of, like brain capacity, that we only operate, I think it's like 15% of our brain capacity, thinking, well, what does the other 85 do then? Because if somebody was able to fully optimize, maybe say 50% more than that, what would you be able to do? So if the adversity creates, you'd be able to almost rewrite your DNA genome. For me, that kind of, it's kind of excites me. That it's like, okay, so if I lean into something that's hard, that's uncomfortable, that serves me in the long run, and that obviously makes you a different person as a result, versus somebody that's undoubtedly fearful versus fearless, and almost withers into a shell and almost contemplates, well, if I was to do this, I'm gonna get inherently the same thing that's happened over and over again. Failure. Obviously, it's an Einstein quote. I see that. That's the epitome of insanity, if you did something over and over again, didn't learn from it. So for me, I think that's down to me, to the core, as that fearless nature, as, hey, I don't want to be a victim. I don't want your sympathy. I've got no problem embracing your empathy. I didn't used to. I used to hate people when they'd be empathetic. Oh, really? your inspiration. Because that's probably because of the sport, because I was able to motivate myself, or it only needed a little bit of a push, somebody pushing a button to kind of go, come on, James, I'm going to push the button that's triggering you and you're going to respond. So when I saw it in other people, as well, why do you need me to be your lighthouse, so to speak, the guiding light in the darkness, to give you the impetus to go off? And I've embraced it. It's taken some time to kind of go, okay, if I'm in that leadership role and I can get somebody to get themselves off the canvas, and then they've literally been able to wipe the blood off their face and the snot from their nose, okay, I'll take it. But it's taken being the bigger person to kind of go, okay, yeah, I'm more than comfortable to hold that mantle, to be that person. Whereas we're only talking about 5 years ago, I didn't like it, because it's like, well, why can't other people motivate themselves in the way that I can? And then I've obviously done some soul searching, like, well, maybe some people have not had the family members, the circumstances to be able to get some of these early wins, these little moments of adversity, to then, okay, in the grand scheme of things, life is hard, but so what?
We can do hard things, can't we? So you're fearless in nature. You understand completely that growth happens when you get uncomfortable. I wanted to tap in with the fact that I do refer to myself as an athletic geek. I know we were talking before off camera about books, and I never had the chance to indulge you that I have already read 7 books this year in 2023 that I've completed, and I did 31 books last year. And that's not all I do. So go ahead.
I got a question for you then, Sonia. Do you know of if I get his Dan Pena, you know, the old guy that's a business guy, curses a lot. He came out with a, I don't agree with some of the statement, but I'm gonna share it with you and your audience. He said that people that got lower IQs are able to make decisions quicker because they don't have to rationalize the thought process. And be it, I can't remember the podcast that was on, because the host was an engineer. He went, in your line of work, if you make a mistake, it costs people lives. So people are going to obviously crunch the numbers. Dah, 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 dah. And I got, yeah, you are right. Because like I see myself dragging my heels on certain things, because I'm gonna go, I'm playing out every scenario before it happens. Whereas it's almost saying that this person that maybe not as smart intellectually is better placed as an entrepreneur. It's like, well, they aren't as well. But he went, it doesn't matter how many books you read, the podcast you listen to, that's not action. When it is a form of action, because you're seeking out, wanting to change. So you're what going to, probably in this case, maybe motivational podcast, looking to learn, looking to implement something that you want to acquire a skill set. But I think the word that he wants to use is implementation.
Exactly. And so what I've noticed with myself, and especially when I'm coaching, this is layered information, like you were saying, whether it's coming on from another coach, or I'm listening to information, or I'm reading information, it's layered. So it's either telling me more of the same with different ways of doing it, or it's challenging me altogether. So do I think part of that statement is true? Absolutely. My brain has to filter out what is right for this situation. However, I find it to be more help than a hindrance, because most of the times it just flows out of me. There's a, like you, academically in school, I was not on board. Yeah. I like the social aspect of school. I like the fact that I belonged to every social circle, and that I did sports and other things besides just my academics. So it bored me. Okay. But in my adult life, I've more than made up for it. And the thing is, a mindset that's continuously learning and continuously growing, of course you're going to be implementing those things. You might not take direct action, but you will change your tune if that's all you're infused by. You see, we are the sum of the 5 people we hang out with the most. So if listening to the news every day for 12 hours a day is part of your people, because it could be, it depending on your scenario, how are you being influenced? Fine. Right? So think about that as a whole. I don't agree with what dude is saying, because for those people that go to college and university and post-secondary, that's pretty much assuming that they're not nearly as smart as anybody else, because they've got more information.
Yeah, it's very subjective. It's very subjective.
I would agree.
I think the statement of inaction is going to trigger people, because like, well, because I had a second thought about it. It's like, well, he's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong. Because most people, first of all, don't finish a book, right? Secondly, they don't take action on whatever that book is implementing, whether it's now or down the road. They normally don't refer back. So I bookmark all of my books. See if I can show you one I just read. I bookmark, of course, I can't find one to just pull. I just put one back here that I just finished. So I know there's lots of, here we go. I dog ear the bottom side of my book when I want to refer back to it. And this one has about 20 different dog ears on the bottom. So I can circle back and make those notes and do the work. I was listening to a podcast yesterday, no, an audiobook, and I was trying to explain it last night to my husband, and it's like I'm gonna have to go and buy the book now so I could review these parts, because alternatively I have to go find the spot on the audio and go back. So I do audio and I do physical books. But it's interesting because at the end of the day, as coaches, as influencers, as people that other people aspire to, and we're in that role, there are some moments that knock us out too. And I know 99% of the time, cannot is not an option, and your mindset is positive. But I know for a fact it's not always there. It can't be always there. We do ebb and flow in life. Life hits us one way or another, sooner or later. So when those periods happen, how do you pull yourself out?
It happens more than people would expect. Would I think it's more, it's been more of a challenge in business, because in my sporting life, I had more control of myself and my competitors, because if I was better than my competitors, I could obviously, I learned a lot of analyzing people and literally get people to do what you want, to almost, and when I've seen it done to people, I couldn't believe it. I was like, well, what, how does that believe person believe every word that you're saying? And I, but then, but because I've been under that person's guidance, I would have kind of go, well, okay, if James is so good, that's that good, prove it. Whereas obviously on the flip side, that you're asking, obviously the other side of the coin. What do I do? I try to not go woe is me, because ultimately that's not useful.
But we
And
go there, don't we?
well, I think when because my co business coach is more like a the other coach is a family, to see other people going through the same struggles, and because one of them, he shared yesterday, he lost a client. I went, okay, I'm gonna lose a client in a couple of days, but I'm not going to sell this, but I've known this for months with mine. So it's like, well, okay, I'll speak to her again for the last time on Monday. I'll do my review, what I could have done better, etc. Get a testimonial, and I wish you all the best. And obviously, the door is always open. So have I not felt like that other coach? Yeah, sure. But I get a constant reminder, because I shared with a coach about 2 years ago. He went, well, where's this perseverance that you've got come from in business? I went, I have the epitome of quitting in business. I lost client after client after client. I ended up with zero. And then I spent a couple of months with no clients that I then had to go to, we talked about this off air, of going to get a
Real job.
real job of work. It wasn't 9 to 5, but working in education as a teaching assistant just to pay the bills. And I did, I'm not gonna say I hated all of it, but I wouldn't go back. But in terms of, for me, that's almost it's the wake-up call, because when things are going wrong, it's like, well, James, that's the extreme. Are you gonna allow that to happen ever again? No chance. Because I'll either get ahead of the curve and obviously do more things in terms of lead generation, get to people, at least having conversations with people, and then if we feel that synergy is there, hey, let's maybe sit down and have a chat about maybe working together and working through some of the things that you've got going on. To I've worked with my coach because I did it last month a little bit, because I wouldn't share that I was how it was affecting me in my mood. People probably wouldn't expect that. But he went, hey, there's nothing wrong. Would you share, and if it's affecting your mood and it's making you stressed, to be, there's no need to be manly about it, to internalize it. I went, yeah, but I'm living on an archaic system that we're not supposed to. Okay, it doesn't matter. If you got a problem, you share it. That, if that obviously was to happen, it's going to happen again sometime in the future. I don't know when, but as in it will happen again, and I know that's not an issue. Okay, this is happening. So literally putting the fire out before it engulfs things and becomes a dumpster fire. To share things, to kind of equal out the load. But because of, I don't even know, for me personally, I don't know where it comes from, because I've been brought up by a matriarchal society. I've been brought up by my mom, my aunt, my grandmother. So thus I shouldn't really have this problem to be able to share. I think it's probably because it's with another male. That it's,
or
it's
maybe more... you overshared. They overshared their whole life and you feel like you can't.
Not necessarily. No, I was okay with my feelings as a young James. It was okay to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think it's probably school a little bit, that you've got to be seen to be cool, and you can't be showing any, you are conforming. And sport is very much like that, in terms you've got to wear a suit of armor. And if you show any ounce of weakness, you pounce on that individual. So I still do that in competitive sport, that if somebody's rattled, hey, let's do more of that, because that person's mentally weak in that department. That, hey, because we'd won a game earlier in the season we shouldn't have done, and the other team came up to me, oh, you were disrespectful. But in what way? Because I don't know what you're concerning about. I thought it was one particular player I blocked. One of the other guy that got blocked, he wasn't fussed about that. Whereas I don't know if it was in an earlier comment I said in the game, I'm talking about wheelchair basketball, so it's quite rough if people haven't seen it. I told one of my teammates to keep knocking him on the floor. So if you're going to be reckless, you're going to be on the floor most of the game. Is it that? I don't know. And I got to thinking after it, and it affected me, because it's like, well, we won the game, and just because of a comment that he said, that I wasn't the only one that he said it to, it was one or two of us. But I was like, well, if you're not passionate about a sport to rally your troops, you shouldn't be doing it. And obviously I'm the captain of that team. I should lead by example, that if I block somebody and he goes out of bounds with it, hey, we've got the ball, turnover, and it literally lifts everybody's spirits. Okay, we should probably not have been in the doldrums in that game, but that's a different story. So coming back to your original question, and I apologize for going on.
No, I sidebar all the time. You're talking to the right one here. I'm with you.
It's one of those, sometimes it's more easy to almost like rewrite the ship as, okay, something has not gone to plan, people haven't showed up, blah, blah, blah. It's literally going back to meditation or mindfulness, binary beats, to reset my mental state, to kind of go, okay, the person's not showed up for whatever reason, that's on them, not me. I shouldn't allow it to affect the way that I'm going to feel after the fact. Obviously human beings are very difficult to do that, but as in if you become better to it, because I saw another piece of content of about a religious pastor talking about, you can't get rid of negative people, you get literally, once you're able to be in their surroundings, you don't care that they're ignorant, you've God will stop sending people. It's like, okay, so I've not fully got it, because I keep getting people that obviously irritate me. So,
well, I loved how you brought up God, because I've recently discovered a really interesting way of putting this together. And then I have another question for you. Okay. So prayer is a way that we communicate to God, however you do it, whoever your God is. And for those listening or watching this, you know, when I say God, I can mean universe, I can mean higher power, anybody. But when you spend time in meditation, that's how you hear what is being said to you. That is God's way of communicating to you, is when you're in meditation. And so I thought that was really interesting. And meditation doesn't have to be done a certain way. It can be a nature walk. It could be anything. It doesn't have to be sitting in silence and in Buddha style. It can be whatever works for you.
Oh, it's slowing down.
Yes.
Because I had a conversation with a young athlete at the beginning of the week. It's like, oh, I can't slow down. Yeah, but if you give yourself some space to be able to do it, it would do massive wonders for mental health, a different perspective on things. So I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm just giving you a little bit of guidance. If you were able to kind of slow the pace down, stress wouldn't overconsume you, and we wouldn't get to overwhelm, and okay, the worst case is not burnout. But I think with that, that's through, because I didn't like meditation years and years ago.
I was going to say, society doesn't teach us to slow down. Society teaches us to do more and more and more.
That's the rat race.
That's the rat race, right? So slowing down needs to be learned. It's not in our ancestors. It's not in our culture. It's not in our corporate. It's definitely not in our education. So all of a sudden, you said you're 38, I'm almost 50, I'll be 50 in July. We're in a point in our lives where we're suddenly infusing meditation or infusing a daily walk that's kind of coming out of nowhere. And to most people, those negative people, they don't get it because they haven't tried it. They haven't created that space to even try it.
Well, I think so. People get, for me, I had a break, had a mental breakdown. That's why I was more embracing of it. Because, well, I blame the job when I was closer to it. Because schooling and most things are very toxic. It's not the children; it's more the adults. And obviously, for me, it was just sleep wasn't great. My eating was poor. I didn't want to exercise. So I conformed to the job, and whatever I was eating was to survive the job. So for me, my body was probably telling me long before I had a massive panic attack at work. I was like violently ill. I had to call an ambulance because I thought I was gonna have a heart attack. Like, oh, never felt.
And how old were you?
31, 32.
So not even a decade ago. And you weren't very old when you were there in that stage. Yeah. That's huge.
Well, I think because you're not, you don't know what to look out for. If I have a panic attack now, I know exactly what it is. Okay.
Now.
Yeah. Let's slow down. Let's do some breath work. Let's reset. And what is exactly that's making you feel that stressed? Whereas for then, well, but I think because there's the way of thinking is stress, you just get on with it. The British stereotype is a stiff upper lip. I think,
yeah, pretty much here too.
That.
Suck it up. Yep.
Whereas that's not, whereas if you're still going full throttle, that was for me, that was probably a blessing in disguise, like a literal reset to kind of go, okay. Because the first day I went in on that job, I saw kids going to school with chocolate bars. And I went, I can't judge somebody because they're going into the store, corner store before they go. I can, because they work in the health profession. So thus, what is it that maybe the parents' education when it comes to proper nutrition for breakfast that I was taught, I wasn't allowed to leave the house without having breakfast. I probably did towards the end of high school because I literally rolled out of bed and went to school, but because it was that close.
Right.
But my mom would be okay, come on, it's time to get up, and I'd probably be in school within 30 minutes. I would still eat breakfast and be out the door and be in my first period on time. So for me, that's probably a regret to kind of go, no, James, this is a mark in the sand that this is what you believe to be right, that those kids probably shouldn't be using chocolate bars, energy drinks, and whatever to be able to get themselves going in the beginning of the day. Okay, the school banned Monster and things like that.
Not here. Well, I don't know about high school, but
Just so they weren't allowed to drink it. It's like, well, if you tell somebody they can't do it, they're gonna do the complete opposite. They're gonna sneak it in and drink some. Oh no, I gotta take that off you. Yeah, but I got another 2-3 in my bag.
Yeah.
But whereas that's only masking, that's painting over the cracks or putting a band-aid over a wound. It's not really solving the problem. And adults will do the same as well. So obviously I can kind of look at it from that as, okay, if you're drinking, I've actually got one client, he was drinking 15 Diet Cokes a day.
15?
Mm-hmm. And I went, but why? Oh, I'm stressed. Okay, well, we need to work backwards now. Sleep was okay. I was surprised. But we need to look to wean you off that caffeine. And I worked it out. The 15 caffeines were like two espressos a day. So it was about 400 milligrams of caffeine. That's a lot.
And not an athlete? And I say
well,
that for the listeners.
I wouldn't consume that much caffeine because it does. I've got one teammate that he likes that pre workout.
Yeah,
I've had the stuff once. I literally was climbing up the walls just to see what, because somebody offered me when I was working in a corporate gym. I was like, okay, I'll try it to see what all this fuss is about and all this buzz. And literally, I could feel my skin crawling.
Yeah, so
I went, no,
does that.
I can't do this. I can't exercise on this. To, yes, is the performance. Caffeine will help.
I was just about to say, as coaches here, caffeine does have a place when it comes to performance and helping you with your training. But you just heard James concur that you don't need 400 milligrams of caffeine a day.
You probably don't need. You need to look at what the real problem is, and probably it's sleep. It's probably sleep. What's your perception towards your job? Probably not very good, but we might not be able to change that one.
Yes,
but people don't look at the one that will probably make a massive difference. Because I don't consume a lot. I do consume caffeine, but it might be before a game. And I've taken too much for a game because I literally felt the same way. I was like, this isn't good. And that was probably like 60. So for me, my tolerance is probably not that high, but I don't drink coffee, caffeinated beverages regularly. That maybe some people might just have go to, we'll give these plugs, Starbucks, or in this country, we've got Costa.
We have Tim Hortons here in Starbucks. So this is a Tim Hortons that I'm drinking. But
we
it's
got
a tea.
We got Tim Hortons in this.
You guys
country
have Tim
now.
Hortons there too?
Now,
and
yeah.
we have Starbucks are the two big ones.
But people don't think twice to go first thing in the morning on their way to work to have, we'll say a medium coffee, maybe a large, maybe a bit. The Americans got their own size. They've invented their own.
This is a medium.
Well, there's a venti.
Starbucks? Venti.
Yeah,
grande.
But the Americans have created another size for themselves. Like, well, why?
No, because it's super big. Yeah. Or they're small, no longer is that small. Anyways, yes. So caffeine is good for sport. We talked about that. There's two more things I want to make sure we cover before we start the sign off. And can you share with everybody what binary beats are?
Ooh, you know what it is.
No.
This is binary beat. So literally, It is one frequency that one eardrum hears and another, and it, and I don't know how it does it, but literally when it goes into the brain, they merge to create a frequency. So I struggled with certain ones in the early days because it just felt, oh, my body really didn't like it. And I've done recently, as of the back end of last year, so November, did a sound bathing class where the person came in with the instruments. And I asked him at the end of it, what's the difference between an alpha frequency and an omega? So the alpha frequency is obviously the third eye, and then the omega. So for me, in the early days, I couldn't tolerate an alpha frequency because this shows that I've obviously gone off and learned stuff. We operate in a beta frequency. That's why we're stressed. When we're awake, it's a beta for it's hilarious when obviously software stuff is in called that. You're thinking, well, okay, so you're telling me that that's why it's not ever very, very good. So that's got to be tested. So in order to what we would do to relax is we will go into theta state, or and when we're asleep is the delta state. So the binary beats will look to do more around, if people were to go on Spotify, Apple, or even YouTube, and you YouTube this stuff, it will do to relieve stress, lower anxiety, help with depression and things like that, to give almost like a spa type experience is one of them. And obviously some are just noises. So they're almost like
the megahertz, like the hertz.
Yeah. So it's just that. So for when you're first doing it, it's like, what's this noise? But that's because we're not conditioned to it because of secular music. And secular music is not ideal either because it's on the wrong frequency.
Yes. So I have been listening to hertz, to a variety of different hertz. I never heard it called binary beats before.
No, it's literally...
That's what I'm wondering, if it's the same thing.
No, it's
it
not.
It sounds different.
Slightly different, but it's two frequencies, and then the brain obviously computes it, and then it becomes one frequency in the brain that the body responds to. But it's two... If you were to put one headphone and just listen, it'd be one, and if you did the other, it'd be a different completely frequency. But then obviously the brain, obviously the power that it's got, combines the two, and that's why it's called binary beats. So the two frequencies. But the stereotypical spa stuff that you're going to find is one frequency. So it'd be one frequency.
Okay.
So some of the binary beats I don't like because it's like, oh gosh, what's this frequency?
And the frequency, for those that are listening or watching this, whichever place you're in right now, frequency is simply a vibration. It's the audio version of a vibration and how it gets received on you.
Well, I think the best way is if there are people to YouTube it, because the chap for the samba, he did it with the Tibetan bowl.
Yeah.
Put water in it, so you every frequency will create a different pattern. So if people were to watch, what TV program was it? Can't remember what TV program, because the beginning of it was frequencies being created as the imagery.
Okay.
And I can't remember. I can't. It's either. It's not Game of Thrones. It's something of that nature. And I can't remember which one it is. Because when I saw the water in front of me, I was like, oh, that's just like that TV series.
Okay.
But I can't remember which one it is. But that's with sand instead of water. Any, we'll call it element. So we're carbon.
Mm-hmm.
And 70% water. So the body is going to respond to the frequency just like water would do in a bowl. So One of my teammates is very deep into that kind of, so we're going to talk about things like that. So when he's got pain, it's like, well, did you do that frequency? Did you try it? So literally it'd be, have you done Epsom salts baths? Have you done your frequency work? Have you done your meditation? But he'd gone further than that. So he can read people's auras. I can't do that.
I can do that a little bit too, where you can see
people's
that.
Colors around. He can, I don't know how you do that, but that sounds quite interesting. He convinced a person utter rubbish. How can a frequency make you feel better? It's like, well, I can see that you're giving off, I can't remember what hue it was, be it like purple or bad aura. And he went, squint a little bit and then look at your hand, and the guy could see it. I've never tried it.
There's a book.
It's quite interesting to almost literally convince somebody to see colors.
There's a book, The Celestine Prophecy, and it talks about, have you read this one? No, probably not. We talked about your reading. So this is what happens to me, James, when I read. Not only did I pull two books off the shelf, but I can literally tell you where it is in this book. And there are dog ears on the bottom, but in this book, it talks about how to tap into auras, and how some people can clearly see it and how some people can't, and you need to focus in different areas. But you mentioned auras, and I'm like, it's actually in here. Cool. Anyways, it's a really, really good book.
It's the same with the East, because you mentioned spirituality, and I'm not that religious. And I've got clients that are a little bit, because I was like, well, are you this? Are you agnostic? Or are you an atheist? Oh, you believe in this, so that means you meet somewhere in between. But I've leaned more into, say, like the Eastern stuff, you know, like the chakras.
I do chakra work, so I get that.
Buddhism and Hinduism is like, well, okay, it's a different religion, but to look at, say, how each different chakra affects you. So the third eye is probably most difficult because it's in here, it's the brain. But each frequency is obviously associated with that. So then you've got one for the brain, the throat, if I get it right. So I get all of them right. Heart.
Let's see. I'll test you.
The abdomen, and then obviously the genitals is the other one.
Yeah, there's a couple in there. So your root is your genital area where you sit down, your sit bones. That's your root chakra. It's the red one. The next one is your sacral, which is between your belly button and, I guess it's underneath your belly button, is your sacral. And that's orange. That's creativity. So your root is safety and security. Creativity is your sacral, which comes before your solar plexus. So your solar plexus are between your ribs and your belly button, just give you a visual. And that's your personal power. That's your confidence. That's where a lot of magic is made. But believe it or not, that cannot happen until the creativity happens. That cannot happen until you are safe and secure and have a strong stability. So those are the three that connect you to your roots. So if you think of it as a tree, and your root chakra is like the tree roots, and the solar plex and the sacral chakras are like the trunks, keeping you solid footing. The rest of you can move around. It doesn't matter how big that storm is, you're not going anywhere.
Is that why you ask people about what their preference is to colors, then?
Yes.
Okay.
That
makes more sense now, though.
Yes. I'm able to tap in. So James is talking about my wellness quiz, and I'm able to tap in based on their answers to that test, which one of their chakras is most out of alignment, if any. And then from there, I come back to the table with three different recommendations that will meet them where they're at and help you start implementing right away, whether it's essential oils, whether it's meditations, whether it's a to-do thing, simple, small shifts that you can implement to start to see results, to feel that movement in that chakra area. And I prefer to work bottom up. Okay, because again, I truly believe that you need that solid foundation. You're not going to be able to focus on divinity if you don't have a roof on your head.
I don't think you'd be able to take it in. It'd be too overwhelming.
And that's why I like to focus from the ground up. So then the other four chakras, your heart chakra, which is typically green or pink. You can hear my dogs. This is real life, folks. You can hear my dogs. Then there is the throat chakra. I'm just going to close this door. So the throat chakra is blue, and that's your communication. Sometimes it's open, sometimes it's closed. And that's the same thing with all of these chakras. And then your third eye, as you mentioned, your intuition, your thoughts, your mindset. And then your crown is your divinity, your connection to spirit, your connection to your higher purpose. And then there is multiple chakras from there, but these are the seven core ones. I get very passionate talking about chakras because it is an easy way to start to make a difference within yourself. So I was speaking to my coach the other day, and like you were chatting about your mate, your sports mate, my coach said to me, "You need to go clear your chakras." I was having a rough day. "Did you clear your chakras?" "No, I didn't. I thought about my yoga, chakra yoga that I like to do, and I hadn't done it. So no, I needed to clear my chakras." And then I did a sound bath. Well, physical, I was listening to one of the hertz. Then the next day, my homework assignment was to cut cords. Do a visualization and cut cords. There was another, oh yeah, chakra clearing and cutting cords. And what my takeaway is with what James had recommended about meditation and the daily practices that he does, whether it's journaling or what he's talking about, and I'm chiming in saying, and there's others, such as cutting cords, such as your chakras. And both of us are here as coaches, letting you both know that we work with coaches. We are also up leveling and upgrading our lives so we can then share that knowledge with all of you listening. What do you think?
What to add to that?
Yeah. Want to add anything to
Well, I'm gonna backtrack because I didn't always believe I even the sport I believed at the back end of my career that I did it all myself, and that is utter lunacy now because it's
You
not
thought
true.
you did it all
Well,
yourself.
because I did the work, I believed that I did it's unjust, and it's not really fair that I need to give obviously kudos to my mother because she started the breadcrumbs. My grandmother was one of those figures to numerous sporting coaches that I've had, mentors, to give me, that intuit to do his intuitions to come on, you might not want to do it, but. So I was at his funeral last week because he suddenly died before the new year, so it was like a complete shock to probably everybody that knew him. And I remember one time where I'd done an event. He's like, "Do you need a physio, James?" I'm not asking you, James, I'm telling you. And me being, gosh, I would have been early 20s. "No, I don't need physio. I'll be fine tomorrow." "No, I'm telling you." And obviously, through his own experience with working with, gosh, probably hundreds of other athletes, you're going to feel 10 times better, if not more than that. And he's so right, because I know that now in my 30s, yeah, if I don't take care of myself after the fact, it takes probably day a lot more than it used to recover from things. So I'm more inclined to be appreciative of others, to, hey, if we can resolve things quicker, so be if it was what we talked about, the bad, to be able to get you back on track and kind of going, don't be afraid to share when things are going wrong, which obviously is very alien to me. Because I don't want to do that. But now that that's okay, that level of communication will upskill. Okay, I've got this to even he has a share wins. Like, why would you do that? why are you going to celebrate them? But every coach does it. Every good coach makes somebody shake a bell. I joke and say people come on, let's dance on the table a little. But to have that confidence to know, matter how small or how big the win is, hey, let's focus on that. And then we'll focus at hand, whatever went wrong or whatever you want to delve into this week. But we're going to focus on, to the point that it's almost automatic with my clients. Oh, I did this. It was small, but I did it. Okay, good. To obviously, as coaches, our wins, obviously, other people's success. Why wouldn't you want to show that off? So I'm probably facing an old school mindset of, you know, what's behind closed doors stays behind closed doors. And then people maybe that are in their early 20s now and younger share everything on social media. So it's almost normal. Whereas maybe they need to come, maybe pull the reins back a bit. It's like, well, some people don't care what you're sharing. And when you fail, they'll have great delight in, I think Dave Chappelle put it very well with this, of the people that are going to revel in when you fail. They're probably going to rub their hands together because you fail. But it was quite interesting considering that's a comedian. He put it well put as that's true. And people, the ones that want to see you fail the most are probably the ones that are insecure to do it themselves.
They are. Of course they are. Okay, there's so much we covered today. And we're going to close this off. I'm just double checking to see if there's anything I wanted to recap before we close this up. Of course, you wear a suit of armor. I do the same. Because as coaches, we're looked at as role models. And it almost is if that permission of being human, it's like as an athlete, or if you ever tell anybody you're on a diet and you're like, you go out to eat and they're like, well, you can't eat that. It's like, you can't be vulnerable. You can't have a bad day. You're a coach. Yeah, no, we're human too. We have human experiences. We just have the ability to turn it around that much quicker. But it doesn't mean we're not going to fall into those trenches every once in a while, because life is hard. So tell me, James, we're going to take the next couple of minutes here and go over a couple things.
No problem.
Meals, movement, mindset, and your relationship with money. Where do you want to start?
We'll go with the awful one. We'll go with the money to start with.
The money start. Okay, so tell me, you know, you touched on limiting beliefs. You touched on your mom. We talked a little bit about mindset. We talked about some goals off camera.
Yeah.
Where are you at in your relationship with money now?
A lot better place than I was.
Perfect. Because that's
progress. We did an exercise. Other coaches and a mastermind in November on this topic. As well, what is your limiting belief? In terms of how you view money, which is quite interesting to hear other people's perspectives on it. Because it's like, oh, I can relate to yours. I can relate to yours. I can relate. And for mine particularly, was around not necessarily self-worth and value of what I deem that I could charge, but it's more the stereotype of, we talked about it a little bit off air, of, you know, my parents won't tell me how much they earned. It's like, why do you want to know that? Like, well, because it's useful information. But because of it being like one of those pillars that you don't talk about, money, religion,
Politics.
And I've seen an amazing one on social media that talked about, it's like, well, why not? Because we might be on either sides of the aisle politically, but we might have similar values. But if we don't talk about it, we won't know that. So if we allow, I'll use the American because it's a bit easier. The American landscape, when it comes to media, is pretty obvious. One is very, very Republican, and one is very Democratic. Other countries, maybe, is a little bit more difficult. I'll use the BBC is probably a good example. BBC is not impartial. It should be, but it's not. So why is it that you're trying to push an agenda on me, and if I don't follow the status quo, that I'm the black sheep, that I'm the odd one out, I'm the problem? And I was talking to one of my clients about it. He went, well, the black sheep is good. It's like, it depends on who you talk to.
Yeah.
Where we're coming from, obviously, some people maybe need to follow, not follow the herd and be themselves by your own admission. Friends, family will ostracize you because it's like, well, why are you going over there? Why, everybody's going in this direction. What's so wonderful over there? Why don't you do like everybody else? So the money aspect is a limiting belief for me, because I don't see why you wouldn't. It doesn't matter because you're both retired now, so it doesn't really affect me in terms of an income. But I think because of maybe the way that they've been brought up, as it's one of the things you don't talk about. You don't talk about money. Why are the wealthy people so wealthy? Because you talk about it. It's almost it's almost indoctrinated from, well, not indoctrinated. Yeah. It's in the conversation from when they're very young to, I think within Paralympic sport, I think it's only the UK, Canada and Australia that fund their athletes other than Eastern Europe. So the Americans is obviously not. So I've earned money being an athlete. So my ceiling was that. I was like, well, I'm not saying I can't earn more than that. But once I got over, I was like, yeah, I can make more money than it was. Well, it'd be about $36,000 Canadian at the time, which is about £12,000 I earned in a calendar year as an athlete.
So it was an average income then.
Well, I was a student, so it probably went even further.
But I
learned to I'm not gonna use, I don't want to use the word survive. I learned to be able to handle a tight budget, as my tuition was paid for, my food was paid for my family, but I only had a certain limit that I could spend every week. That when I had that kind of income, I was like, well, I can make that go for a lot further, and I managed to probably keep some of that money after I'd finished. Because there's some left over. But obviously that limiting belief of what I can earn as a coach is we've looked at it this year. Well, what is it that you want to earn? And this is probably why last year and the years prior weren't very good, because there was no substance towards the figure. It was just a figure. When the days that I can't be asked, as in the days that are tough, I've got no other motive as well. If I want to help, we'll say 1,000 people in a year, I could divvy that down in terms of, well, this is how many people I've got to help this month. And if I don't show up today, I'm letting other people down, which would hurt me pretty deep, because I don't like that. But where we've looked into that now this year, okay, what is the goal? What is the stretch goal?
Yeah.
The why for the goal is, okay, I want to do this because XYZ. The stretch goal is going to be tough because I've never done it before. I won't hit quarter one, but that's not, it doesn't make me go into a negative mood, whereas before it'd be, oh, I had a bad month. And it's transpired into another one. And then
a year long, it can hurt.
Last year, I had six months like that. And whatever it was, I hit July and mentally I changed. But between January and June, I was in a massive funk. But then I looked at the year before, there wasn't a 6 month stretch, but there were months that were like clockwork. It's like, okay, if you can, well, Feb wasn't great, but at the moment, March is the best month of the year already, and we're only 9 days into it. So
last year month was my best. Last year, March was my best month.
So
But
I
then
think that
I had a dry spell after that for 9 months, almost a year now. Almost a
but
year.
you go into but you got so the what I'm trying to do now from the financial thing is kind of going, well, yeah, money, the money makes the world go round. I can't stop that because that's obviously that's how the world works. But not having that emotional attachment that it dictates how I feel.
Yes.
I'm trying to learn that to kind of go, okay, to if you have a good month, and I think talking through with other people to kind of go, and I do this with a good month, sometimes I down tools. And I went, that's utter stupidity as well. Why would you not want to revel in the momentum of this train and jump on it? So now for this month, I'll kind of go on, well, you're gonna do that. So if you may be taking it a bit too lackadaisical on one day, come on, let's go. Because this momentum's not gonna last. And it's a rap artist, he's got a podcast, Ice-T, put it, bad times are just around the corner. So why not revel in the positive way you've got it and then enjoy it. So for me, that's exciting because it's like, well, okay, I had a bad experience on Monday of somebody not turning up. So I went, okay, let's message somebody else. And literally within 15 minutes, I was on a call and within an hour, I made a sale. Just
See?
because I went, okay, woe is me. It's a bit disrespectful that the person I rang them in the end because I went, well, we're meant to have this call. Where are you? So I'll be home in 30 minutes. I waited 40 minutes. I was like, no, I'm going to be respectful of me. If you want to obviously have this call, you're going to have to do it yourself. And I'm going to message somebody else to. I didn't even expect the person to ask, well, how do I work with you? It's literally, okay, do you just want to have a chat based on what you've got going on, da, da, da. Oh, how do I do it? To the invoice was paid within 5 minutes. I went, wow. So for me, that money one, there's a limiting belief with that because I put my price up in January. That price has now been, I've sold at it. It's like, okay, so I can probably charge more than that. And if I put my prices up, that's the benefit of being self-employed. You can do that. And people willing to do it becomes far easier to hit your targets because don't need as many people to do it. Thus, you don't need to be on as many calls. You don't need to have as many conversations. Okay, there's a choice. You either do high ticket or you do volume. And obviously volume would be, I don't know, depend on what the price point is, maybe $49 or below. You're gonna have to do a lot of volume to that to that get your revenue. And even through learning, like for YouTube, I watched a video where they looked at in order to make example did they use? I think it was a 10 million dollars in a month off ad revenue versus long form content versus shorts. They needed 6 million views with the long form. They needed almost 200 million with the short to make the same amount of money. It's like,
Wow.
no, which what I'm going to do, I'm going to focus on the long format and then take the shorts from that and then obviously redirect back to it. And okay, we're talking about stuff that's obviously I'll name the YouTube channel. It's Think Media. It's going to get a lot of volume because people want to know this thing to be either for a podcast, their own content. They're in marketing, da da da. So literally the viewership is probably a little bit easier, but the same is probably true with the way that people view money. It'd be all, I think a lot of people think get rich quick. And my coach specifically, I think he said to me, I know a lot of businesses that I work with, they don't exist because they had that mentality. Whereas I might go in towards some of that. I didn't listen to him last year or the year before because I got sidetracked. I went, oh, I liked it. If I promote this, he said to me twice, James, focus on the other one. Didn't listen the first time. I listened the second because it's like you shouldn't have to repeat it the third time because he's right. He's right the first time. I think if you were to come to him with an idea as, hey, I'd like to do it this, and this, how I'll do it, probably listen to kind of go, okay, if that's what you want to do, James, or one person has done it and it was amazing. I didn't even think about doing it for live video to piggyback off your own content to tag people that have, so say we've got a challenge we have to go live for 31 days all in March, but the other coach has come up with tagging the person from the day before on today's video after the fact. Oh, I thought you'd like this. I was like,
smart. See,
but then you'll see a pattern of people. Okay, you've watched 31 days of my content. That I think maybe we should have a chat.
Yep.
In some of these, but I think that mindset that I've been open to investigating it, to kind of go, well, okay, well, where does it come from? Why do I have this? Because I don't come from a well-off family. I come from probably, well, I don't think middle-class suburbia really exists anymore, but as in I had advantages that some people maybe have not had. So it's potentially not me done me some favors because I've got comfort, so some things come a bit easier, so I can rest on my laurels versus maybe somebody that's come from hard times. They've really got a ruthless streak in terms of, well, I don't want to ever be in this, so that's why a lot of professional athletes can get out of that situation because they want to upscale their entire family and change their entire landscape. But those individuals still have a problem with money.
Absolutely.
So it changes overnight, as if you've gone from nothing to being on $1 million contracts. I can't remember. The statistic was horrific.
There's a book I read, too.
That went bankrupt. It was horrific. You're thinking, well, shouldn't...
Artists, musicians, and athletes are the biggest category for when they make a lot, how quickly they go bankrupt, because they're not taught what to do with it. And they don't have those conversations.
Yeah, but that's the system. It's the system not allowing that to happen. So by... I watch a lot of Alex and Mosey's content. So he quite be pretty much, I think the best one he did, he worked at a smoothie drinks company when he was younger, and they were in the back reading I'm gonna say Forbes or something like that kind of magazine, and in the magazine it was like this person had bought a $5,000 US hamburger, and he did the numbers in his head as, I'm making, I think it was like $6 an hour, and my lunch is a $12 hamburger. How many hours I'm gonna have to work to pay that for that hamburger? And he literally broke down the guy's salary that was bought a $5,000. He's like, I think it was $120,000 a year. Thus, that $5,000 hamburger is only worth 1 hour of his day, so it's not a big deal for somebody. That's whereas the person that's on $12 an hour really can't afford to have a $12 cheeseburger. So so those things are like, they kind of go thinking, wow. Whereas that where people need to go with the thing, I've got to give credit to obviously my family a little bit. The US will probably not agree with this, but in terms of like savings, you need to think, do I really need something versus what I want? Somebody put out content on LinkedIn about, she goes into schools when they're making the transition from elementary school to, we'll say, middle school. Obviously for us, it'd be high school. And about this. And they're worried. The kids are worried about, oh, am I going to be bullied if I got not got the latest thing? Am I going to be bullied out of Like 12 years old, I didn't have to think. I think I got my first phone at 14 or 15.
I was much older than that, but yes.
It was a hand-me-down from my mom. So I think it's the second or third contract I've got in my life. I think the company provider's got more to, because you have to in this country, you've got to do a sign a document to say that you would upheld to paying the bill. And if you don't, obviously it gets through. And if you don't sign it, you can't take a con. It's like, well, if the person can't afford to have something,
shouldn't be allowed
to get it regardless, as you need to maybe do a credit check and kind of go look at their finances. No, sorry, you can't afford to get out this contract of, mine's about £40, so about $120 Canadian a month. That's a lot of money if you don't have it. So to my point that I've probably been given some street smarts when it's come to finances and money, but I've had to learn and I'm still learning to the level that maybe I'm going to use the movie Richie Rich, you know, Macaulay Culkin. Mm-hmm. Somebody that is that position can literally step in to take, okay, mom and dad didn't die in the movie, but, and people haven't seen it, but as in he stepped in and ran the company and there's the same with, have you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Yep.
Let me pull it off the shelf. Go on then. For everybody else.
Let's see here. Where is it? It was actually one of the books I wanted to talk about in a book club because it is a phenomenal. Oh, maybe I only have the audio on that one. Although I thought I had the book.
I've listened to it as a podcast episode of him talking about the Monopoly board.
Yes.
And I went, everybody's played Monopoly. Everybody understands.
I might not have it. I might actually have the audio only. Branded. Yeah.
Yeah. Greenhouses and the Red Hotel. You get a hotel, and obviously people owe you a lot of money. But obviously the real aspect of the story is what part of it? Hawaii is it? I'll use Hawaii 5-0 because literally the newer version shows Waikiki Beach with the Hilton and things like that's what he's talking about. That they bought that his, it's not his real dad, but as in the I think it was his friend's dad, literally bought up all the property in around that, obviously probably bulldozed it and then went in with Hilton and built loads of hotels. So, but then this is this has come up in my life that one of the students in the school I worked at, so he would probably be about 20 years old now, but as a 16-year-old, he went to the form teacher, why don't we learn about tax?
Wow. Yeah.
But I didn't challenge the teacher because the teacher went, you don't need to know tax. But he's got a valid point that if somebody doesn't want to go into further education, maybe to university or go into a 9-to-5 job, you're going to pay into a pot and you're looked after, the person needs to know,
either
know how to do their own tax or know a good accountant. So, the kids I've and the other one with it was a year 7 student, so it'd been about 11, 12.
Okay.
He went to me, Mr. Roberts. That's the movie. It was in science class. Like a picture of the room. Why do the naughty kids get rewarded and the good kids, and what's the incentive for to being good? I went, oh my gosh. It's an 11-year-old. I went, I'm not the right person to ask that, but you've got a good question. You need to speak to the principal, the vice principal, or the head teacher and the deputy head to ask them, and they can't answer you. There's a serious. I know the. I obviously know he's right.
Right.
Because this is where the naughty kids get rewarded so they behave. So what's the point of me being good? But he turned out to be a naughty kid in the end. But I could see why he gravitated. It's like, well, what's the point of me being good if I don't even get praise? So, but I was amazed just when I kind of heard. I'm thinking, this is coming out of an 11-year-old's mouth. He's right, because I see it every single day, but I can't answer you as to the real reason as to, because this is what's wrong, as in, shouldn't society. You be, what's deeper rooted, because there's obviously lack of respect as well.
Of course.
But I think coming back to the additional point of the money issue, I'm still learning to be able to find, to learn from Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Alex and Mosey, because the content's out there for people to consume now. As it's just ultimately not even finding the time to sit down and finding people that you can resonate with, because I don't like Grant Cardone, because just because he says it. They're actionable steps, but it's like, well, I come from hard times. Like, yeah, whatever. Your dad was wealthy as well, so that's utter ridiculous. So don't lie to my face. I think it's that moral compass. Well, some people will like him, and I'm probably one of those people that doesn't. So I don't watch his stuff. So I choose to, what am I consuming now? Alex and Mosey, Tony Robbins. Brendan Bouchard, Eric Thomas, which is a hip hop producer, but the black audience will know a lot, and things like that, and pick out bits of Bob, bits out of each person, because I asked technology as well, okay, what's the similarities between all those five or six, the six person, I can't remember who it is off the top of my head. Okay, now give me what makes them unique. And I probably similar more so to Brendan Bouchard, because he's very scientific. He's very meticulous. He's very slow with his pace. Whereas the Alex Moses is not that bad. He wears a white beater shirt and he's wealthy. So it doesn't conform to what you would think of somebody that runs a 6-7-8 figure business. Whereas Tony, Eric, and who's the other one? They're quite loud. They're quite.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously they got what they say is impactful, but that's not me, so I don't want to be a facade of myself and be fake, as in, okay, I probably can be loud, but it's not authentic to be able to do it day in, day out. And I'll say the stereotypical American or Australian loud mouths. I'm generalizing, I'm not saying everybody's like that, but as in,
no, I understand that, yeah,
to almost make, well, what is it that I can be myself and do, 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 do. And then if people have to get a dictionary out from time to time, okay, that's okay. No, but that's probably my upbringing as a single child. I was around a lot of adults, so I probably use bigger words than I do, put them in the wrong place sometimes, but
that's okay.
That's one of those things. So,
listen, James, actually, I was just realizing, and I hate to cut you off, but we've been like an hour and a half, 90 minutes. And I think for the sake of everybody, no, it's like you said, we're in good company and it's easy to flow. What I'm going to suggest is that we do a take two, a second part, another day, where we're going to top up what we talked about and tap into those other three topics, mindset, which you did talk about today, meals, and movement. How does that sound to you?
That sounds perfect.
Okay. I am going to sign off. Everybody, James's information is going to be in the show notes. And the book, The Celestine Prophecy, that I've referred to, will be in there. We're going to have James give us a couple of links that we can add to it as well for the binary beats, so we can tap into that. So he's going to share with me his favorite YouTubes or wherever, and I'm going to share that with everybody on the show notes. Is there anything you'd like to say, James, to help sign off before we end today's podcast?
I say this so much, so I'll say it again. I think people need to challenge their limiting belief. They need to look where either the language is coming from, to the way that they think, and not necessarily allowing them to be defined by it and having the no judgment. This is obviously more difficult, but as in to look and have that awareness to be able to look at the way that you're talking to yourself, because if it was coming from somebody else, you wouldn't tolerate it. So to be able to challenge the way that you think, the way that you believe, and ultimately what we're talking about, limiting beliefs, to see where they're coming from and to work past some of that.
I couldn't agree more. Pushing past. Oh, sorry. Here's what's pushing past your limiting beliefs is the hardest thing that you can do. And with that, how many times do you talk to yourself as if you're talking to a friend? And we don't. We would never say to our friends some of the own conversation that we have going on through our mind. So with that being our final takeaway, again, I want to give sincere gratitude and thanks to James. You'll have all of his contact information in the show notes. And thank you so much for being a part of today's episode.
It's been my absolute pleasure.